Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Michael Wilbon about Hocus Pocus junk. And we'll also talk to Barry Zwerluga about the state of the NCAA as it tries to stay afloat amidst the sea of change. But first, as you well know, commerce.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They're 7-21. If they were employees of my school, I'd fire them all. But in general terms and in looking forward, because I talked about this last night with Pat Forty as well, what does it mean that Dartmouth basketball players want to unionize? What does that mean?
Well, it means a lot of things. For the first thing it means is that I saw a little blurb today that you probably missed, which was that the marching band is now practicing to play working 9-to-5 in all the games. So I think that's the first thing.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All right, so we have a special guest. George has decided to come back to the show. He was here last week and did not talk. George did not want to talk, said, I just want to watch. As a result of that, what happened, George?
I got hammered. So I am back to redeem myself. I told Tony I wanted redemption.
So, but when you say you got hammered, everybody you know, including your girlfriend, was disgusted with you.
I was getting texts from people that I haven't heard from since high school.
Right. Say, so. Why didn't you talk?
Yeah. You go on a podcast and you don't talk.
Right. Well, you know, so you're here to talk, and I actually have a question. And I talked to you about this earlier in the day. I was watching the golf. I think this was Saturday. I watched yesterday up to a point because Scottie Scheffler was the only guy on the leaderboard who was under par. Everybody else was at par or over, and there was no tournament. By the 12th hole, Scottie Scheffler was up by 5 shots, and not only was no one going to catch him, no one was going to get even one shot better than they were. And in fact, they did not. They all sort of fell off, so it got boring. But on Saturday, and this is the Arnold Palmer tournament, on Saturday, Wyndham Clark was either tied for the lead or close to tied for the lead with Scheffler and Shane Lowry and Will Zalatoris. I mean, the leaderboard was good. It was the first good leaderboard of a PGA Tour event all year. He hit a bad tee shot. The tee shot went into the deep spinach on the right-hand side of maybe 17, 16 or no, 16 is a par 3, so
18. Was it?
Was it 18? Maybe it was 18. 18.
It was 18.
And so he's out there, Wyndham Clark, who won the U.S. Open last year, and who, Michael, isn't his sports psychologist? Don't we know her?
Yes, know his mom, Julie Ellion.
Yeah, Julie Ellion has made Wyndham Clark better. Wyndham Clark's out there with his caddy, And he's also out there with a guy holding a boom mic and a guy holding a camera. Like, the camera is not 80 yards away. The cameraman is right there taking pictures of everything. And to see how deep the ball is in the rough, excuse me, and to see what club he needs, he's going to take a wedge. He's going to go left. He's not going to try and go to the green. This thing's buried. This is what I do. I mean, you know, I have this shot a lot, so I know it. He puts his club so far down in the stuff and so close to the ball, George, that in live television, I even thought, the ball moved. What's going on here? Don't you have to be penalized? Did you see that on replay or live?
I was watching, and not only did he put the club behind the ball one time, he did it multiple times.
That's right.
And seemed to me that it was, you know, matting down the grass behind the ball and the ball.
Improving your lie, which is not allowed. You're not allowed. You have to.
No.
Is it called playing it down?
Playing it as it lies.
As it lies.
Yes.
Michael, did you see that?
I was watching this live, and it's interesting because you mentioned where the cameras are, and this is something that's been happening for years on tour because you have every single camera angle available. And you saw it a couple weeks ago at the Genesis in Los Angeles when Hideki appears to – he puts the club down in similar fashion. He has a little bit of a rehearsal move, and immediately you start getting the armchair analysts calling up rules officials to the point where you have Nance say, shut it down beforehand. The ball does not move, and they have, you know, they have their rules official immediately on it. But this is one of those, you know, one of those simple core rules of golf, play it as it lies. And I don't think there's any intent here, but you would see this thrown against somebody like a Patrick Reed years ago. You'd see this at every level of amateur golf, somebody who's systematically trying to improve their lie by just checking and rechecking whether they're looking to see if a ball is embedded, or they just know there's a big clump of Florida rough right behind the ball and they want to improve that angle of attack. Here, you're still just sort of chipping out.
Would you have penalized him, Michael?
No. I don't think so, but this is also one of those things where, because of the nature of how you want to get shots for TV, you make a problem much worse than it probably is. And it's one of those things, if you freeze frame anything, we see this in football all the time, you can start to see anything that you want to see.
George, would you have penalized him?
I agree with you, Michael. I don't think I would have penalized him, no.
Okay, because...
They had the conversation, walking referee with the group, with his playing partner. And at the end of the day, Wyndham said it didn't move. So in that case, as long as there's an agreement with the group and his playing partner and the referee, they continue.
Now, who's the rules guy? Jubasek? Is that how it's pronounced? I don't know his name. He said he didn't think it moved. He said it's okay if it moves, if it comes back to the original spot.
The oscillate.
Yeah, that was his position. But professional curmudgeon Brandel Chambly wants him put in jail. Right? He
lock him up.
In Golf Magazine, they wrote about this yesterday, that Chambly was utterly bent out of shape in this, because that's what he does best. Chambly gets bent out of shape. I like Chambly. I like him on television. But he wants to penalize almost everybody.
He went off on him on Twitter.
Did he?
Yeah,
that's what he likes
to
do.
So I'm happy to trust the player here. This is too often the rules of golf tend to bend or follow a strong personality. You see this all the time if you have a named player who says, no, my ball crossed the penalty area up here, and the rest of the group just sort of looks at each other in disbelief but sort of bows to said player. And the rules of golf sort
Tiger.
Of allow that to... Yes, well, that's
Tiger.
A very specific reference about 15 years ago, which I ended
Masters.
Up watching on one of the golf's greatest rounds played on the Golf Channel. And even in real time, you know, you have the announcer
He takes
going,
it back 100
yards.
I'm pretty
yards. Sure it crossed a little farther back there, across that red mark, but
all right. So one other thing, a show this week would not be complete without me railing about daylight savings time. Because now when you get up, you've just lost an hour and it's dark, and you take the dog out and it's dark, and it hadn't been dark for about 3 weeks, and I don't understand. And I know everybody is saying, oh, here he goes again. Just, it should never, daylight savings time should never start before the end of winter, March 21st. It should never start. And I think it should start April 1st. I mean, that's me personally, April 1st.
Yeah.
But it was dark this morning, and the dog didn't want to go.
I'll trade you the dog walk for trying to get kids to bed pre 9 o'clock when it's still light outside.
They're like, what's the deal?
Finishing dinner. Like, can we go outside and play? No, you cannot go out and play.
So this is, it's too early. March 10th is too early to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, some people like me wouldn't do it ever. But I understand it. It's okay. I'm not saying I hate daylight savings time. I'm saying if you start it now, why don't you start it January 8th? Well, why don't you not have standard time at all? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Who decides when it starts? How do they have an official date?
I don't know. I don't think it's the President of the United States.
No, I feel like somehow the Farmer's Almanac would be involved in that.
I don't know how it works. It's probably some committee.
Yeah.
There's some government committee because it's across the country. Like, you can, if you're a state that doesn't want it, like Arizona.
Yeah, can you just say we're not
doing
it? Yeah.
But all the other states do it, unless maybe Texas. Is Texas in two time zones?
I thought
is all of West Texas maybe in a different time zone? Is it in the Pacific time zone, way West Texas? I don't know. Indiana, for example, is shaky on this. Sometimes they turn, sometimes they don't.
So this is just the first thing that came up. The Uniform Time Act of 1966 established a system of uniform daylight savings time throughout the nation.
Yes, uniform daylight savings time, yeah. But does it establish when you impose it on people?
No, I'll have to keep looking for that.
So you look that up.
And three counties in the West Texas region follow Mountain Time.
Mountain Time.
Because of daylight savings times, areas observing Central Time switch between Central Standard and Central Daylight.
Yeah, so that's like places like El Paso. All the way in West Texas.
El Paso.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso.
And parts of Culberson County, according to the Google that you had me
search. Who sings that?
Marty Robbins.
Marty Robbins, yes.
I can't help it. We'll take a break. Michael Wilbon, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Rainy night in Atlanta, Dallas was in town. I never will forget it till I'm buried in the ground. We were watching the game on the big screen in the den. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. After one quarter, Luka had the hot hand. He told Kyrie, go get some popcorn in the stands. Told Hardaway Jr., grab your laundry and some fries. By halftime, Luka was just playing with two other guys. In the third, Josh Green hit a three and Luka scowled. He whispered to him, go take a shower, here's a towel.
Luka now all alone against five men. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The Mavs lost by 30, but we cheered from the den. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. Hey!
That's the brilliant Dan Byrne. Plays in Michael Wilbon, who doesn't like Luka Doncic, but can see that Luka Doncic is not shy about shooting and is a great offensive player. Plays half the game, but he's a great offensive player. Let's start, and I wasn't going to start with this. I was going to start with the two women's games, or three women's games, that we all watched, you and I, yesterday from different areas in the country. But you got to start with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is going to take a one-year contract in Pittsburgh, and you take a one-year contract because your salary is being paid by Denver. And the only thing Pittsburgh's going to pay is $1.4 million, the minimum, which is fine. He goes to Pittsburgh, where Kenny Pickett has been like nothing, really nothing. Everybody wants him to do well because he's a local kid and he went to Pitt, but he's been nothing. Russell Wilson's better than Kenny Pickett. What do you think of this?
You know, I believe this is great for Russell Wilson and the Steelers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great. Because I think Russell Wilson's got a couple years left in him. Sean Payton was too arrogant to want to sort of go further with it, even though Russell Wilson had 24 touchdown passes.
24-8. Picks. 24-8.
So,
yeah.
You know, come on. I mean, don't tell me that Mike Tomlin and the Steelers aren't going to put pressure on Russell Wilson to win for them. That's not what the Steelers do, even when they have great quarterbacks. So, is Russell Wilson better than people who have taking the Steelers deep in the playoffs before, like Neil O'Donnell? And yeah, he is. And so he's got it. I believe that the staff of Mike Tomlin will get it out of him. And I believe that Russell Wilson can sort of operate, never off the radar. Quarterbacks don't do that. But he can operate within a team framework where everything's not riding on him. The Steelers know how to put together a team. And Kenny Pickett's not the guy. Maybe he'll learn a lot in the next year or so, you know, or two, if Russell Wilson plays a couple of seasons. But I believe Russell Wilson's got enough in the tank. This is it's not even a risk to bring him in for $1 million. So good for the Steelers. I think it's a great story.
Yeah, I don't. You and I disagree on what he's got left. I don't think he's got anything left. But I'm glad he gets an opportunity to play in a situation where it's a playoff team year after year after year, or very close. Now, it is a brutal division. I mean, Baltimore is in that division. Cincinnati, with Burrow healthy, is in that division. And that's a tough one, right? That's
a tough one. 5 years ago, people said he was in a brutal division when he was in Seattle, so what?
Yeah.
That stuff changes. They could be a dog division. That stuff turns on a dime all the time. I mean, you know, the worst division in football has been – you know, probably the NFC Central. Now with Detroit better, the Bears looking like they're going to draft people, the Packers coming back with Jordan Love, all of a sudden I got all three of those teams, you know, making the playoffs this year. So, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. You ready to compete? Russell Wilson at one point wouldn't have given a damn about other teams in the division because he was in the Super Bowl twice.
That's right.
So
that's exactly right.
That factors. You get a chance to play for Mike Tomlin with a team with people that know how to put together a team. Good for him.
There is a domino effect, and I don't know what it is going to be. Baker Mayfield stayed with Tampa. We don't know what Kirk Cousins is going to do, whether he stays in Minnesota or not. Russell Wilson moves to Pittsburgh. Because of your antennae in this one, do you think this has any particular effect on what the Bears do with Justin Fields?
Well, it's one less potential suitor,
right?
But no, the Bears will decide, or have already decided, whether or not Caleb Williams is their guy. And if he's your guy, you take him because you got the first pick. If you're not sure and you're going to do other stuff, then still, if you're going to keep Justin Fields, then no, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't. This should have very little to do. Except, of course, it takes one potential suitor out of the mix.
Right. Okay.
Reduces their leverage a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's true. Let's go to what we watched on television yesterday. And I watched And I watched women's basketball. I watched three different championships. I watched a lot of golf, but I watched women's basketball as well. I watched it because they were championship games, and in the power conferences, there were not. You know, I also watched Drake and Indiana State, which I thought was great. I mean, that was a really exciting game. So you get this once in a while. But there were two things for sure to talk about. One is Caitlin Clark had a terrible first half. She didn't make anything. She had four points.
Yeah.
And she had 30
two
in the second
12.
Half.
Two yeah. for 12 at one point.
0 for 8 from 3 in the first half.
0 for 8.
What did you make of that comeback? I mean, I thought Nebraska gagged a little bit, sure. But what did you make of the Iowa comeback?
This is why you watch. And I didn't watch the championship game. I didn't care about that. You're watching the stars of college basketball. When you can watch LSU, South Carolina,
and we'll get to that.
Clark and Iowa, they are the stars of college basketball. There's no guys worth a damn. There's no star power in men's college basketball. None. None. Okay? I had breakfast yesterday. I won't mention because he didn't know I was gonna quote him. I had breakfast yesterday with an NBA club president. President. His job is to look, one of his jobs is to look at as much college basketball as his eyeballs will stand. And I said to him to start breakfast, I cannot watch the men's college game. Am I overstating this? He looks at me and goes, are you kidding? No. No. The product's not any good, and you can't watch it, and you don't know who's any good. And I do this for a living. I don't know who's any good in men's college basketball in the United States of America. And then he and I proceeded to watch women's college basketball. That's what we did. We didn't watch it because it was a championship game. We watched because they're the show. Caitlin Clark is the show.
She is.
Angel Reese is the show. Kim Mulkey is the show. And God knows South Carolina with Dawn Staley, they're the show, dude. I'm watching men's college basketball not because I have to. I watch women's college basketball because it's the show. So if there were big games tonight, I'd watch them tonight.
So
I watch other games. Oh, and then you can watch. I watched with Shanae Ogunike, who was hosting yesterday. The two of us carried the water for the wraparound shows, halftimes and stuff like that for the NBA. And I'm watching with Shanae, a former Stanford star, and she's watching the last game ever of the Pac-12.
That's right.
She and her sister, they won stuff. They played for the winningest coach ever at Stanford in women's college basketball, at least for now. And we're watching her lose to Juju Watkins, her team,
well,
her alma mater, to Juju Watkins in South and Southern Cal. Well,
but that's interesting because that game, I watched a lot of that game too.
Yeah.
Stanford totally got Juju Watkins off her game. Totally. But they didn't stop the other people.
That's
they put
right.
four women on Juju Watkins, and she got nothing. And the other ones beat them. So that was an interesting, from a strategic standpoint.
And those are number one seeds, by the way. That means at least Stanford's.
Stanford was
number one
seed.
No. They're going to be a number one seed.
USC will be,
both,
not Stanford.
Both.
You think both?
And
South Carolina will be, and Iowa will be. That will be your four number ones.
Those are your four number ones.
So let me get to the LSU game. LSU against South Carolina. Another good game.
So great.
South Carolina is winning, I don't want to say comfortably, but winning throughout the entire game. Late in the game, as South Carolina has enough points and has enough clock that you're pretty sure they're going to win, there's a steal. South Carolina strips an LSU player. And as the South Carolina woman is heading down the court, she is grabbed from behind, which is a regular play, happens all the time. You don't want to give up a layup, so you grab from behind. The LSU player who did that then shoves, as she's walking back towards her bench, shoves a South Carolina player. And then the big woman who hit the shot that saved South Carolina the other night, decks her. Just throws her down on the ground.
Great.
Throws her down on the ground. And then, you know, then a near riot ensues. And some guy's coming over the scorer's table.
The brother of one of the players who was involved.
Okay. So all of this happens, and it takes 30 minutes to sort it out.
Yes, great.
My position on this is that, and I understand why the South Carolina player is tossed. I get that. Yeah. And I understand why she can't play the first game in the NCAA tournament, which is okay because it's a 1-16. It's a 1-16. It doesn't matter.
And women's college basketball.
But I thought LSU initiated all of this. Did you?
I don't know. I didn't care. I loved it. I don't know. I didn't spend any time trying to judge it. It was great. These are two teams that plain don't like each other.
That's
they
right.
They're great Hall of Fame coaches who win national championships, plural. And one of I know both of them. Because one of them, you and I have known since she was a student at the University of Virginia, Dawn Staley. Yep. And the other one, I happen to be in something called a Hall of Fame class with Kim Mulkey. This was just great. It was great theater. Nobody got hurt. Everybody was thrown out except for the 5-on-5. It was like the NHL game where everybody's in the penalty box. This is, once again, this is the show. Don't tell me about men's college basketball. Don't tell me about it. There's no one to see. There's nothing to see. Anyway, the news of the week was two kids going to Duke next year. That's the news of the week for men's college basketball. Yeah, the Dukies have some people coming in who are 15 now. Hey, come on. I don't know who's at fault. I don't care who's at fault. I didn't spend one moment.
I think you have to make that judgment. That's me. I don't care.
I literally do not care. I cared about the game. I cared about the dislike, the genuine dislike. And by the way, then I thought the coaches were great afterward. And Dawn Staley just said live on the air in the moments after. I regret that. I regret that we pushed. I regret it. And it was just tremendous, tremendous theater. You couldn't have what? What are you going to have better than that? You're going to have bigger stars?
No, the theater was great.
Yeah.
The theater was great. Wonderful. My personal opinion is how this thing started, but the theater was great, and the penalties were reasonable. You can't just deck someone.
You can't deck her. The penalties were reasonable. Once again, everyone was thrown out except the five who finished the game for each.
Right.
So, man, it was irresistible the day of women's college basketball.
You're excited. That's good. I'll talk to you later.
Well, you and I said in November, the men.
I've had difficulty with it.
Tony, again, I'm watching with a president of an NBA team who's enthralled, who's totally into it, who then got on a plane to go, of course, to conference championships with the men. That's his job. But the passion, if you love basketball, is with the women's side of it, and it has been all season. And I don't think this is going anywhere. I know that Jay Billis thinks it's a one-off. I don't believe that for one moment. The men's college basketball isn't going to change. People that you don't know, and you're not going to necessarily know. Tony, the top of it, tell me who's going to be chosen. You know by now, we get to April, who's going to be chosen at the top of the NBA draft? You know that.
Well,
you
know I know who would be chosen if he were quicker. Zach Edey. I know that.
Okay, but he's not.
But he's not. And so I don't know who's going to. I don't have any idea.
And you know why we don't know? Because there's going to be two French kids.
That's possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's certainly possible.
So, it's turned, you know, the pipeline for men's college basketball, there's a problem. And we're going to recognize that. We're going to be reminded of that problem again? There's something called the Olympics. And I know that people think, oh, well, you know, LeBron and Steph are going to play it all as well.
Nah.
All right.
They're 50. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Barry Zerluga will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I was swishing my jump shots, hitting line drives, long off the tee. Everything was fine, then I threw it out of bounds, trying to take it to the house. That was the moment I flushed the mouse. I flushed the mouse. I flushed the mouse. Baby in the bathwater, scoop, I shoo the cows. That was when everything started going south. That was the moment I flushed the mouse. Drove past the speed trap doing 98. Shanked the winning putt past the security gate. They caught me in the Kremlin with a baggie in my blouse. Over and over, I flushed the mouse. He flushed the mouse. He flushed the mouse. Baby in the bathwater, scoobosh to the cows. That was when everything started going south. That was the moment he flushed the mouse.
Can you be more brilliant? You can't be more brilliant than Dan Byrne. You can't be. He just did I Flush the Mouse.
Should be a number one hit.
Unbelievable. Michael, if people who are not as talented as Dan Byrne, but are talented nonetheless, want to send in their original music as Dan does, how do they do so?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Completely brilliant. Barry Zerluga joins us now, and Barry is a Duke graduate. I watched the Duke-North Carolina game. May not be the last Duke-North Carolina game of the year. They may meet in the ACC tournament. That's certainly possible. I just have always assumed that when you were at Duke, you were writing for the, is it called the Chronicle? Is that the paper at Duke? Do I have that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So I assumed you were not part of that group, the Cameron Crazies. Were you ever part of that, or were you always distinct from that?
No, my first, you know, you don't cover the men's basketball team there, even if you're working on the student paper, until you have a little bit of seniority. So, you know, my sophomore year, whatever, you're covering lacrosse or soccer or volleyball, whatever the beats are, and then you kind of gradually work up. And by the time I was a senior, I was part of the crew that covered the men's basketball team. But I did sit in the crowd many times before my senior year.
When you watch a game like this, and this was at Cameron, when you watch it, And it was a very good game. It was a really good game. But there's no Krzyzewski, there's no Roy, there's no Dean. I got a couple of texts that said it felt a little different. And this was from Duke people and North Carolina people. You're watching it on television, I assume. Does it feel different to you just because of the change of coaches?
Yeah, and I think, Tony, that's as the ACC tournament comes to D.C. this week, that's something that I have on my mind to write because, you know, this sport, college sports, have for so long been defined by coaches because they're the constants, not the players, right? The players cycle through every 4 years or usually, frankly, every one now if you're at
Duke.
Yeah,
if you're good, yeah.
There's not, the connective tissue is the coaches, and the coaches, to a certain extent, define the rivalries. And there's a little, you know, Carolina is very good and could contend for a Final Four spot. Duke is probably a step behind that. So the programs seem on the floor to be the same as they ever were. But there's a little gravitas that's lacking, and that's not the fault of John Shire, and it's not the fault of Hubert Davis. They don't have the background and the backdrop that Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Dean Smith, with a couple of small blips in between for Carolina and Bill Guthridge and Matt Doherty. It's just not the same. Again, I'll use that word gravitas, and that extends through this upcoming conference tournament to Syracuse without Boeheim.
Yeah,
the characters on the sideline have changed, and in this sport, more than any other, that really matters.
So I was watching, and at some point late in the game, they took a shot of Mike and Mickey Krzyzewski, who were courtside, and it occurred to me, and you're a Duke grad, it must have occurred to you, every time Mike's in that gym, they lose to Carolina. It just seems that way the last 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I actually find it striking that he goes to as many games as he goes to. I thought that, particularly in Shire's first couple years, it would be important to have tons and tons of space and just let him breathe. It's his program. And I'm not saying that, you know, maybe it speaks highly of Shire and his confidence level that he's not bothered by his mentor and the guy who essentially kinged him.
By
granting him this job, be in the same gym. But I'm sure in a situation like Saturday night where Carolina was, wasn't killing them, but was pretty much in control the whole way. There's got to be some people in that gym thinking, hey, Mike, could you go over to the huddle here and draw something and maybe fire up the troops a little bit? That you can't help, you can't escape that kind of, you know, when he's in a room, he overshadows everybody there.
It was a very good game. Carolina made 2 threes at the end of the game that sealed the game. One from a kid who had his career night, and I call him a kid, he's actually 25 years old. And the other from a point guard who was like sort of off balance and just beat the shot clock. And those threes won the game. And there is the possibility is a rematch in the ACC tournament, which curiously is being held in Washington, D.C., in the very arena that Ted Leonsis wants to leave. For many, many years, coaches at Maryland, coaches at Virginia, coaches anywhere not coaches at South Carolina leaving the conference – anywhere that was not North Carolina, they said there's a built-in bias here, a Tobacco Road bias. The tournament is always in North Carolina, and we never get a break. I could do lefty. Well, I don't know, you know. and then they began to move it around. And now it's in D.C. There's no – Maryland's not in – have they not checked? Maryland's in the Big Ten. Why is it in D.C.? What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think it's as curious as I think you do. I mean, if you go back to the original expansion of the ACC, which, you know, now is many generations of expansions ago, back in 2003, it was a two-pronged move. It was one to get what they thought were going to be kind of game-changing football schools into the conference, primarily Miami. And two, it was, and I'll use a phrase that they used and I don't endorse, but they were saying, we want to change our geographic footprint, and we want to get into the media markets that are New York and Boston. And so now you have this sprawling conference from Miami in the south to BC in the north that includes Pitt and Syracuse. And so if you look at it from the ACC's perspective, they don't care. I mean, I shouldn't put it this way, but they don't care that Maryland isn't in the ACC when they're playing the ACC tournament in DC. They look at a conference that sprawls up and down the East Coast and absolutely overlays Washington, D.C. as a market that they want to be prominent in. I would point out that both Virginia and Virginia Tech, which have, you know, big alumni bases in Washington, yeah, are in the conference. They, of course, are not at the height of their basketball powers right now, but Virginia Tech won the tournament a couple of years ago. I've been to this tournament when it's been at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and it's been very fun. I've been to it when it was in Greensboro. I mean, one of my favorite ACC tournament memories was the Saturday semifinals where the matchups were NC State versus Wake Forest and Duke versus Carolina. And, you know, that building felt like it was a Final Four because the four North Carolina-based fan bases, yeah, you know, each filled a section and rose when their team came in. And it's just a blast. But the tournament is not what it once was, because the conference is not what it once was. It's a sprawling behemoth, and that's to say nothing of the Big Ten, which Maryland is in now and very soon will span from coast to coast.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because whenever you see that promo for the Big Ten at any one of their football or basketball games, and they show you the logos of the school popping up all around, they wanted desperately to get the Washington market and the New York market. They wanted the New York market so desperately, the Big Ten did, that they consider Rutgers part of it, even though nobody thinks of Rutgers ever. They don't even think of Rutgers. So they wanted that. And now they've got USC and UCLA. Well, now they're coast to coast. So I sort of get it, but I think that it diminishes, I think you agree with this, right? It diminishes, the geography diminishes the fervor in these tournaments. It does for me.
I totally agree. And it's, you know, these sports are built on traditions and allegiances to schools and then rivalries that come out of that. And those rivalries, you know, naturally from the old days were, of course, as much geographic as anything. I mean, go back to Duke and Carolina, right? They 15 minutes between them. Like that's a factor in that rivalry. I just don't, you know, is Rutgers USC, is that going to like get a lot of people's, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck standing up? I'm just not sure that it does. It's hard. You understand why all this is happening because it is straight up money, and how can we maximize not just the money for our conference, but therefore what we pay out to each school, and how these athletic departments that are essentially separate corporations, not, you know, being funded by the schools, but funding themselves. You get why that happens. But I think there's inarguably something lost in all that. And you go back to what you said about Maryland not being in the ACC. I mean, I have to hold back from being the old man, you know, with a Carnival Barker type of guy, being like, oh, it should be, Maryland should be there this week, because that ship has sailed. But yeah, I still think that all the time, that Maryland should be, if Washington, D.C. is hosting the ACC tournament, Maryland should be in it. It should be a fun advantage for their fan base, and they shouldn't be, as the ACC tournament comes to Washington, going to, you know, Chicago or Indianapolis for the Big Ten tournament, and then asking yourself, well, wait, if the Big Ten really does include USC and UCLA, is the Big Ten tournament someday going to be in Los Angeles or Las Vegas? I mean, I wouldn't bet against it at this point.
No, I mean, there's an arms race going on in college football and college basketball that most people, or many people anyway, like Jay Billis and probably you, from what you've written, that they're going to destroy themselves, right? I mean, they're going to destroy themselves by doing this.
Well, I would say a couple of things, and I would agree with Jay Billis on this. He's been on the, you know, the players need to get some chunk of the pie here because they are putting out the product. And I couldn't agree with that more. And that's come true in, you know, name, image, and likeness. Kids can make millions of dollars, that, you know, not everybody, but there are kids who make that much money because they are worth that in terms of their brand. I think that's completely, completely fair. Has that had a negative impact on college sports as a whole? Maybe it has. So the trick here is to figure out what the new landscape is and get ahead of it if you're the NCAA, and they have been behind it time and time and time again. If you go back 10 years to the Ed O'Bannon case versus the NCAA, which was essentially saying, oh my gosh, you guys use our uniform numbers and players that look like us in these video games and we get nothing out of it. The NCAA should have, when they lost that case, seen what was coming and said, how can we develop an ecosystem that works for everybody? Instead, they've been chasing the game for a decade and not getting out ahead of it. And essentially, I'm not sure really what they do anymore other than stage basketball tournaments.
No, it's they're a disaster. It's too bad. Somebody like that, they should appoint Bill as head of the NCAA and do the revolutionary work that's actually necessary. All right, I'm going to let you go. I won't even talk about Ed Cooley and how much he bothers me with what he does. Just I won't force you into that. I won't. Anyway, thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Barry's for Luga, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
That's Biff Gott. Anybody named Biff? We like that, and he does all the parts in that.
I believe so. I don't think there's anyone named Hap or Willie
Hap
singing backup.
No, no. Death of a Salesman, kids. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
That'll do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, I just want to say, I don't know what it is that makes me love you so. I only know I never want to let you go because you started something, oh, can't you see? That ever since we met, you had a hold on me. It happens to be true. I only want to be with you. That's Dusty Springfield. That's better even than Son of a Preacher Man to me and Wishing and Hoping to me. That's the best Dusty Springfield song ever, as far as I'm concerned. Thanks to today's guests, Michael Wilbon, Barry Zwerluga. Thanks to our sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. From Bennett Wise, who is a sports anchor and a reporter in Warrenton, Virginia. Well, he's at WSBT 22 in South Bend, Indiana, but he's from Warrenton, Virginia.
Okay.
He said, I slipped flush the mouse in my sports block Friday night when describing Notre Dame women's basketball against Louisville in the ACC tournament quarterfinals. Here's the line verbatim. After leading by 22 in the third quarter, Louisville cuts the deficit to 4 with just 2 minutes to go. But Notre Dame ain't flushing the mouse tonight. My producer shouted in my ear afterwards, what the hell does flush the mouse even mean? She's not a sports fan. I got to laugh. Hopefully local littles did too. And that's from Bennett.
It's starting
George,
to spread.
So, George, yesterday, what did you ask me yesterday?
So, I...
Talking heard, to the microphone.
I've heard this expression, flush the mouse, and I had no idea what it meant.
So I explained it. I explained that we don't even know what it means. We think it's something bad because, in fact, I killed a mouse and flushed it down the toilet, and everyone said I was an idiot. But now we're going to try and make it into something great.
Sure. Got a trademark.
From Vincent Kolb Lugo. Two things regarding last Wednesday's show. It's such a pleasure hearing you tear down Wilbon's ridiculous reasoning behind why he doesn't care to watch Shohei Ohtani play preseason basketball, especially after he gushed at everything Victor Wembanyama did prior to arriving in the NBA. Two, and more importantly, in your tour of I-95, you forgot the bold new city of the South. Yeah, I'm talking about Jacksonville, Florida. It's where I grew up. It's where I learned to drive. I still remember my mom's white knuckles clutching the overhead handles as merged onto I-95 traffic into the Fuller Warren Bridge. It's the home of the Players' Championship, Limp Bizkit, the Jaguars, the Donut Shop, and one of the few rivers, this is true, that flows south to north, the St. John's River. I feel slighted, but not so much that I'll stop listening to the pod. You must be, he's a producer of all, producer and host of All Things Considered in South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
So he must not know my history with Jacksonville.
No, apparently not.
Happy birthday to everyone ever born except Tony Kornheiser.
Yeah.
One of the greatest Monday Night Football sides.
Jacksonville was impossible. I mean, all it was were waffle shops.
Yeah, a lot of waffle houses.
I mean, it was just, no. No, but I'll, it's been a long time since I've been there. I just don't include that as a major city, but I'm grateful for the email, and yes, I don't insult anyone who lives there.
No.
I just don't want to live
Another
there.
Great sign, Tony Kornheiser is a bag of snakes.
Yeah, that was in Boston. They did that in Boston.
What?
From Sean P. Stanton of the St. Sebastian School for Boys, coats and ties mandatory in Needham, not Revere.
Ooh, Needham.
As a high school history teacher at an exclusive preparatory school, I'm not in the wish fulfillment business. However, I'll be renting a beach house in York Beach, Maine over the July 4th weekend. The house sleeps eight, is close to golf courses, outlets, and Bob's Lobster Rolls. You and the gang are invited. Fun fact, the city of Revere is not named to honor Paul, as is commonly thought. That's certainly what I thought.
I certainly thought that as well.
It is named for the spot on Route 1, I-95's predecessor, where you can turn again. Please tell Richard Connolly to flush the mouse.
I'll have to look into that.
I didn't know that. From Patrick Sitter, who writes, Patrick Sitter, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, again. I believe in cow language, skubosh means flush the mouse. From Alex Lau, this is even better. Tell Patrick Sitter in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to eat it. I don't know him, but he's had a lot of praise heaped on him recently and gets more emails read than I do, so I'm jealous. And isn't jealousy and envy what drives this show, not the connective tissue? Or am I missing the point? No, you're not missing it, Alex. P.S., I'll be in D.C. in late March for work. If my hotel isn't a two-bathroom situation, do you think I could stay in the little house while I'm down there? I'll hang up and listen. From Tim, it signs Tim in the Midwest. I cannot continue to listen to this. The following states are in the Midwest: Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. That's it. That's the list. So not Nebraska.
Not Kansas, Missouri.
I guess not. I guess that's the beginning of the West.
Okay.
I mean, I guess once you cross the Mississippi River.
The geography of your country still baffles me.
I understand that. From Eric Trainer. My wife and I have been PTI fans since the very first show. We generally watch it at 5:30, then fix dinner together. Lately, we've been playing the podcast at dinner, as we both find that preferable to actually conversing with one another. My sleeping habits have changed pretty drastically as I prepare to hit 60 this June. I find myself going to bed early, and I'm often sound asleep by 9:30 or 10. So by 4:30 or 5, I'm well-rested and ready to go. I get up, maybe walk the dog if he's even awake, piddle around, and then try to quietly get back into bed to stare at the ceiling for 2 hours. This morning, as I silently sneaked back under the covers, my wife, 10 years my junior, rolled over, got right up on my grill and said loudly, "You're turning into blanking Tony Kornheiser, and he's an old blanking man." She rolled back over and went to sleep. She didn't seem pleased. I took it as a compliment. I like that, Eric. From Jim Lukens in Naperville, Illinois. When Michael appeared to be backing Wilbon watching Wembanyama over you watching Ohtani preseason, I thought you would respond, "Michael, you're my oldest son, and I love you, but don't ever take sides against the family again." Godfather reference. From Terry Tahara in Bremen, Indiana. Don't know if you saw this, but a kid at the Butler Xavier game last night made a 94-foot putt the length of the floor into a mouse hole for $5,000. As incredible as that was, the real question is, can he make a three-footer with $5 on the line? As always, thank you for the hours of smart talk, music, and laughs.
Yeah, I saw the video of that putt. It was remarkable.
It's luck.
Yeah.
From George McGuff, I think it's McGuff or McGalf, I don't know. "I heard you open a Thursday's podcast about shouting at cows. It reminded me of the woman I'm related to by marriage. We've been together for 38 years, and during that entire time, every time she drives by cows, she says, 'Hey, look at the moo cows.' For our first few years, I pointed out that it was slightly redundant to call them moo cows, but she paid no attention. Now all my children and grandchildren call them moo cows, and whenever we're around people outside the family, they look at her and the kids like they're crazy. Note, she doesn't do this with other farm animals, just cows. Well, she wouldn't say moo goats.
No.
You know.
Bleat goats? Is that what
I mean, but that's nice. Moo cows. I've heard that.
Yeah, moo cow. Sure.
From Brian in Falls Church, Virginia. My 10-year-old daughter's basketball league is in the midst of its postseason tournament. Her team was the number 3 seed coming into the tournament. In the semifinals, they defeated the number 2 seed. On the way home, I congratulated her on the upset. She responded it wasn't really an upset because it was only 2-3. And they had beaten the team during the regular season. I realized then that my little girl has the soul of retired newspaper columnist. Just to confirm, though, would you mind asking Bob Ryan if that's an upset or not? Well, I'll hang up and listen. From Marvin Goldberg. I went by the CVS in Tenleytown yesterday. It was the last day for the CVS there. I spoke to Evelyn. Every time she sees me, she asks how you're doing. She's very sweet. I thought you'd be interested to know she'll be working at the CVS on Connecticut Avenue across from UDC.
Okay.
So that's great.
That is good to know.
Because Evelyn's the best.
Yeah, we go.
I need to know that.
We roll with Evelyn.
I will make sure that my prescriptions go to that one.
Parking's difficult for you there, but we'll make it work.
I'll take an Uber. I'll charge it to you. From Rusty Frederick in Savannah, Georgia. David Aldridge moment for me on Thursday when you played the two Bludkin songs. Not only have I seen them live a few times, but my lifelong friend John Mills, the biggest baseball fan I've ever met, was the bass player on several of their records. Also, during your conversation Wednesday with Chuck Culpepper on the incomparable Caitlin Clark, you marveled at her ability to lead the nation in scoring and assists. Yeah, I said, who does that? And here's the sentence. Who's going to tell me? Did you know that Trae Young, in his one and only season at Oklahoma, did the same thing in the men's game? I didn't know that.
Did not know that.
I know that Wilbon hated Trae Young at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Hated him. Thought he could never be a pro. How's he doing? He's been an all-star 4 straight years. And 2 seasons ago, Young led the NBA in total points and total assists for the season. Admittedly, he was only 3rd in each category on a per-game basis. That was interesting. Jeff Pigott, who I know, Jeff Pigott was at Caitlin Clark's last game in Iowa. I don't think he went to the Big Ten Finals in Minnesota, though. Thanks for the shout-out and mentioning Chuck's article. Sunday was great on many levels, including celebrity sightings. Jake from State Farm on the T-shirt gun. Lynette Woodard honored with an extended standing ovation. And the famous rapper, Travis Scott. Famous to some. If he was sitting in here with a shirt that said, I'm Travis Scott, I would know him. Best line of the day at her post-game presser, reporters asked Coach Bluter if she knew who Travis Scott was. She smiled, stood up to leave, and said, no, but I know who Lynette Woodard is. Mic drop a moment. From Jeff Heisen, Chuck and Roxy number 6. That's 8. Ooh. Oh, by the way, Leon was on number 300.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, Leon was great. Leon loved it.
Oh, that's
on number
great.
300. Well, Chuck, 300. Jeff Heisen, Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm visiting Florida, and within an hour of driving on 95, 2 motorcycles passed me going 100 miles an hour, and I thought Mr. Tony's right. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't want to be on that.
Mm-mm.
Coy Nichols. Hey, T-Boy. I drove on I-95 today. Can I consider this to be my David Aldridge moment? No.
I don't think so. No.
From Chris Foster, who's a finance manager and official Subaru rep of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Subaru of Midland, Odessa, which I assume is in Texas.
Odessa, Texas. That sounds right.
That.
Yeah.
And about Sam the Sham deckhand, I thought he played for Binghamton. No, he didn't play for Binghamton.
That was Sam Sessoms.
Right, Sam Sessoms played for Binghamton. No, and the guy's name was Stu. My friend Jody said it was Stu, who played Sam the Sham for one song. Daryl Walter, while in Thailand last week, I heard an email read from someone in Bangkok. The woman I am married to and I are in the midst of a 6-week trip to Southeast Asia. We're currently in Luang Prabang, Laos. Have you received any other emails from Laos? We'd love to be the official Southeast Asian correspondent of the show. Well, you're only going to be there for 6 weeks.
Yeah, temporary posting.
Yeah. As an added bonus, when we are not gallivanting around Asia, we live in Rehoboth Beach. Prior to living in Rehoboth, we lived in Bethesda, where a feminine child, Hannah, was once a hostess at Chatter. I didn't know that. She got the gig because she was the Bethesda girl who went to Binghamton. I didn't know that. But
that's a good angle to get that job, yeah. Sure.
From Jesse Chernetsky, who calls herself the pen box lady, Jesse Mikutowski Woodworking. Oh, I remember. Yeah, from the pen, the Jimmy Breslin pen box.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right, if you don't, you're not going to last long in this business if you don't use a Bic. I went to Camp Bada Wagama in Iron River, Michigan. That's it. That's the email. Okay.
Right,
thank you.
Keeping
thank
it Jesse. Concise. Appreciate that.
And from Mark in Boyds, Maryland. Do you know where Boyds, Maryland is?
I'm not overly familiar with Boyds.
Ask Kevin,
no.
He probably knows. The other day, as you played the mailbag, we listened to the pleasing sounds of the euphonium. Tony credited Phil Coleman for the jingle and further said he could not identify a euphonium if you lined it up against a tuba and a xylophone. It seems to me, if you've ever seen a tuba and a xylophone, it would be the remaining one.
Just say it.
Yeah, you're right.
Makes sense.
Yeah, if you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Bing.
Rainy night in Atlanta, Dallas was in town. I never will forget it till I'm buried in the ground. We were watching the game on the big screen in the den. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. After one quarter, Luka had the hot hand. He told Kyrie, go get some popcorn in the stands. Told Hardaway Jr., grab your laundry and some fries. By halftime, Luka was just playing with two other guys. In the third, Josh Green hit a three and Luka scowled. He whispered to him, go take a shower, here's a towel. Luka now all alone against five men. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. The Mavs lost by 30, but we cheered from the den. The night Luka Doncic scored 110. Hey! I was swishing my jump shots, hitting line drives, long off the tee. Everything was fine, then I threw it out of bounds, trying to take it to the house. That was the moment I flushed the mouse. I flushed the mouse. I flushed the mouse. Baby in the bathwater, scuba to the cows. That was when everything started going south. That was the moment I flushed the mouse. Drove past a speed trap doing 98. Shanked the winning putt past the security gate. They caught me in the Kremlin with a baggie in my blouse. Over and over, I flushed the mouse. He flushed the mouse. He flushed the mouse. Baby in the bathwater, scoobash to the cow.